Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie reading the Big Bend Sentinel, article September 30th, 2020. The Archives in Apartment 14 by Abby Perot. Martha. For decades, artists and employees at the Chinati Foundation would generate paperwork. As it stacked up, it would be swept into boxes and stashed away in Apartment 14, a room built into one of the barracks at Chinati Foundation in Fort D.A. Russell. While those who had been around long enough could point you to the box you were looking for, as decades passed, staff turnover meant much of Apartment 14's contents were unidentified storage to be rifled through from time to time. Hidden among the bank boxes, folders, and stacks of paper in the dim apartment and storage closets are ephemeral treasures by Donald Judd, documenting the period where he worked through the creation and growth of the Chinati Foundation. Also in the apartment are jottings and ideas from artists in the collection and documents that reveal the history of the institution itself. Through project plans, artist-in-resident applications, local newspaper clippings, financial documents, and much more, it was the completion of the Foundation's master plan in the late 2010s that uncovered a need to process the archive. The Foundation Executive Director, Jenny Moore, applied for a grant from the Mellon Foundation and received funding for a two-year project from April 2019 to April 2021 to process Chinati's paper archive. It's Hannah Marshall's duty to sort it all out. Marshall initially moved to Marfa to work remotely for an archival software company. Fortuitously, it was around the time the Foundation began its search for its first ever full-time archivist. She took the job as archivist and, with the help of archive search fellow Hannah Yetwin, has spent over a year and a half in Apartment 14. As the pair shifts through 1,000 feet of physical paper, they are identifying items, categorizing them, conserving them, and making them searchable for future use by scholars and the curious. At the same time as they handle the physical, they are also building a database that's a guide for the collection. Items are sorted into individual record groups. And then the duo writes finding aids, which help researchers learn what the collection has, including relevant history and the scope of the records. You're creating a lot of order where there wasn't any, Marshall said. A record group in our archive would be the records of Donald Judd, and within that there'd be a series for the artillery, shed, milled aluminum, the works of concrete. Here everything revolves around the art, Marshall explained. Among the records, Marshall has unearthed a draft of an unrealized book made by Judd and Cousy van Bruggen. Written on the cover of the assemblage is Donald Judd drawings freestanding concrete. And the ensuing pages of the book dated from 1990 are filled with scanned drafts of the concrete works, taped in place, revealing an order of creation that Judd saw as important. It's clear they were trying to get a feel of what this book would look like if they made it, and it never got made, said Marshall. But I find it to be this charming and thoughtful document that is also, when you look through the really shabby mock-up, it's a really important document of what he thought was an important sequence of images to see and understand. In it, there are sketches for configurations and units that never happened, she notes. It is such a great, weird thing to come across. Marshall also called it unbelievable timing that last week she came across the handwritten speeches of Rudy Fuchs, a Dutch curator, early board member of the Foundation and friend of Judd. The timing was notable, as the speeches were from early years of the Chinati Weekend, which begins this year on October 9th. There is an archival photo of Fuchs delivering one of the speeches, and Marshall had heard they were legendary, but with no recording, it was unknown what was said in those early days of Chinati Foundation. He's delivering a speech in that picture, and these are the handwritten drafts of one of the speeches he gave, she remarked, as she carefully showed the paperclip speech stored in an archival sleeve. He's a beautiful writer, so his speeches sort of bring a tear to your eye. And through the archiving project, those speeches will be later available to the public. Even on more benign day-to-day documents, Judd's distinct handwriting is visible in his doodles and marginalia dot the archive. A sheet of paper from 1981 shows Judd sketching out a concept for a postcard with the big rudimentary sun drawn in the top corner and sky taking up the large sum of the page. Written on it is a message inviting people to visit Chinnati back when he could sum up the collection by writing, "Two works by Donald Judd, paid for by the Dia Art Foundation, are placed permanently at Fort Russell, Marfa, Texas." It was a message recording the early era of the Chinnati Foundation as summoned by Judd himself. The Mellon Foundation grant is purely for the paper records, meaning records that have been generated in the last decade, like emails and digital design documents, are not included in the scope. Marshall said cataloging digital files would be a next phase, as would be any plans to digitize media like photos, film, or slides. But Chinnati is already looking ahead to the next phases, which would catalog other media and collect stories, images, and ephemera from those in the community and those with longstanding connections to the Chinnati Foundation. Escobar exits Brewster County Health Authority position. For some residents, Brewster County Health Authority Ekta Escobar has been a calm and evidence-based voice throughout the coronavirus crisis, a homegrown version of Dr. Anthony Fauci, by Stephen Paulson. Brewster County. Ekta Escobar, the health authority for Brewster County, has resigned her position, effective immediately, Brewster County officials said Monday in a news release. The news release, which came from Brewster County Judge Elizar Cano, thanked Escobar for her excellent job throughout these difficult past few months during the COVID-19 pandemic. "We thank Dr. Ekta Escobar for her service to Brewster County and wish her well in her future endeavors," the news release stated. Escobar, a pediatrician at Big Bend Regional Medical Center, was appointed as local health authority earlier this year. The unpaid position, coupled with her hospital connections, made her a leading voice for coronavirus updates and status reports in the Big Bend region. Escobar leaned into that role, giving regular presentations at meetings of the Alpine City Council and Brewster County Commissioner's Court. As a result, for some residents, she's been a calm and evidence-based voice throughout the coronavirus crisis, a homegrown version of Dr. Anthony Fauci. Escobar offered the region early warnings on coronavirus. At a virtual Marfa City Council meeting in April, Escobar noted that the Big Bend region was short on medical resources and warned residents to stay vigilant. Within months, Alpine doctors would start sending their first serious coronavirus patients to hospitals in Midland and Odessa. "Overreacting and being alarmist now is going to save lives," Escobar said at that meeting. To truly slow the spread of coronavirus, the region was looking at months of social distancing. True distancing. Escobar's role as a leading public health watchdog in the area made her unpopular with those who opposed shutdowns, mask requirements, and other coronavirus precautions. First, there was J.P. Bryant, owner of the Gage Hotel in Marathon, who sued Brewster County, and then Judge Cano personally over the county's temporary short-term rental bans. Those lawsuits, which were primarily aimed at Judge Cano and county commissioners, never named Escobar as a party. But lawyers for Bryant nonetheless criticized the doctor, writing in court filings that she was expressing personal fears without any scientific support and should not be regarded as an expert. Then, in May, Escobar became the target of a social media controversy after parents of some of her pediatric patients said she dropped them. Those parents said they thought Escobar had stopped seeing their children because they opposed coronavirus precautions. As a doctor at a private clinic, Escobar can choose patients at her discretion. But Art Martinez de Vera, a lawyer for one of the parents, nonetheless accused her of violating civil rights laws. He said it was very bad practice to deny a child health care because of the parent's political stance, and filed a medical board complaint. BBRMC put out a statement saying it was committed to local patient care, but declined to address the criticisms of Escobar, citing the legal dispute. As the story gained traction, many residents jumped to her defense, posting social media comments of their own in support of Escobar. By press time this week, Escobar did not respond to questions about why she decided to resign or what her future plans are. Judge Cano also did not respond by press time when asked whether any other candidates had stepped forward to take on the role of local health authority. Under Texas law, local health authorities are appointed by the officials of the local government body they work for. In this case, that means Brewster County Commissioner's Court will likely find her replacement. At press time, it's unclear when commissioners will discuss the topic. Coronavirus by the Numbers by Stephen Paulson, Tri-County. The graph above shows coronavirus case and death counts for Presidio, Brewster, and Jeff counties, as well as for Ojinaga, a Mexican city bordering Presidio County, and Sal Ross State University in Alpine. The United States data is from the Texas Department of State Health Services and is current as of Tuesday, September 29th. The data on Sul Ross State University is from the school's online COVID tracker, and the figures for Ojinaga come from the Chihuahua State Government and are up to date as of Monday, September 28th. County officials in Presidio and Brewster counties are reporting higher numbers of total cases than the state. As the Big Bend Sentinel has previously reported, there are often discrepancies in case counts from local and state officials, either because state officials have not yet updated their numbers or because they are unsure whether a case should be classified in the region. State officials also do not include probable cases in their data, which local officials sometimes do. For data purposes, readers might assume that cases at Sul Ross State University are a subset of Brewster County's cases, but that isn't necessarily true. At an Alpine City Council meeting in September, Ekta Escobar, then the local health authority for Brewster County, explained that state officials typically count college students at their permanent address, where their parents live, over their temporary address, where they're living for college. That means, for example, that a Sul Ross student from Marfa would be counted in Presidio County rather than Brewster. That logic made sense, Escobar said, because the state didn't want to double count cases and because many college students across the state are currently taking remote classes. Still, she felt it was important for Brewster County to track cases at Sul Ross because those students typically live, eat, and shop in Alpine. That's another likely reason why Brewster County's own numbers are often higher than the state's. Sul Ross State University provides information on total and active case counts. To calculate the number of recovered patients, the Big Bend Sentinel is subtracting the number of deaths and active cases from the total number of cases. But recovered, in this case, does not mean a patient is completely symptom-free or does not have any chronic issues. Rather, it just means that a patient is no longer contagious and that health workers no longer consider their coronavirus infection to be active. Brewster County's active case count has plummeted in recent months, a sign that Alpine has largely recovered from an outbreak in late June and early July. Presidio County's numbers, meanwhile, don't capture the fact, so far, a disproportionate amount of its deaths have come from the town of Presidio. Making Together from a Distance, Hachinati Education Pivoted to Virtual Learning by Stephen Paulson. Marfa. Earlier this year, educators at the Chinati Foundation and another local group, the Dixon Water Foundation, were working on a new project with 8th graders at Marfa Independent School District. The goal was to get kids learning about watersheds and to realize that earth science didn't have to be totally separate from art. The Chinati Foundation took students to Dixon, where they learned about water absorption and soil types. Students started working on their own plaster landscapes as a sign of how topsy-turvy life would soon become. Chinati had already implemented hand-washing rules in its buildings as a precaution against coronavirus, which at that point had killed just a few people across the United States. But that watershed project never finished, and by now, readers probably know the rest. Coronavirus was soon raging on the east and west coasts, and people as far away as the Big Bend started distancing. Public schools across the region soon shuttered. Local officials imposed emergency rules, issuing stay-at-home orders and temporary hotel closures. The Chinati Foundation closed doors to its visitors, as did countless local businesses. And educators at the foundation, who often relied on in-person activities and projects, were left scrambling to reassess. Molly Bondi, the lead educator at the Chinati Foundation, said the weight of the pandemic first hit her when Marfa started shutting down. But at first, she said she figured it was just a temporary adjustment. I didn't think it was going to continue for as long as it has, she said. But as the weeks and months dragged on and spring turned into summer, Bondi said she realized she wouldn't be giving class tours or meeting with students anytime soon. I saw things were continuing to go in the same way, she said. She figured we're going to be doing online learning for a while. In many ways, the position Bonnie found herself in wasn't so different from that of others across the state and country. At Marfa ISD, teachers were trying to find ways to keep students engaged and educated after students were told that they wouldn't be returning to in-person classes after spring break. Even Chinati itself was seeing changes. In the spring, like other institutions across Marfa, it closed to visitors. In the summer, it started reopening to some guests for self-guided, socially distant tours of its outside spaces. This is very much a process, Jenny Moore, the group's executive director, told the Big Bend Sentinel in June. We are moving slowly, with safety first. Michael Roche, The Director of Education and Curricula at Chinati was blunt about the disruptions caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The foundation has been working with children in the region for decades, he said, with events like poetry readings, workshops, and public events. The pandemic has challenged us in so many ways, he wrote in an email this week. And Chinati Education, he said, realized it needed to pivot. That meaning reaching kids not with trips and projects, but through computer screens. In March, a couple weeks after Marfa ISD closed, Chinati's education department publicly announced its first virtual project, Making Together. In a video outlining the project, Roche emerges onto a green screen. Hi and welcome, friends, he said. We are living in a peculiar time. It might feel a little weird to you. It might seem a little scary. I promise you, you are not alone. In the video, Roche outlined some of the challenges of this new era. From teachers who were trying to figure out virtual classes to students who were missing their friends. We believe making and sharing art together will make us feel connected, he added. He stressed that the project was open to families anywhere, whether they were in Marfa, Presidio, or even across the ocean. Making Together ran for 7 weeks, with a theme each week inspired by works at Chinati. Students studied shapes, transformation, storytelling, movement, design, light, color, and friendship. There were also videos focusing on particular works at Chinati. It was sort of a virtual-ish tour of an artwork, said Bondi, the lead educator. Each of those themes came with its own sub-projects, which could be anything from designing a hat to choreographing a dance. These simple projects work toward building student understanding of the fundamental elements of art and design, Roche said in an email. And with all the projects shared online, including impromptu videos posted on Instagram, students in classrooms could join in whether they were in Marfa or not. For Bondi, the lead educator who produced and appeared in many of those videos, working remotely presented new challenges. In a classroom, it can be pretty evident if students are engaged, she said. It wasn't so easy to tell online. As she sees it, interacting with students also became a more delicate task in the pandemic. Teaching at this time means having awareness that students are experiencing stress and anxiety and trauma, she said. Still, going virtual wasn't all bad. On Instagram, Chinati's education department could reach an audience well beyond Marfa. Soon, people from across the country were commenting on the posts and some were even sending in their art pieces. Teachers as far away as New York and California started using the curriculum. One of those was Genevieve LaRiva, an elementary school special education teacher at PS 110 in Brooklyn. As a special education teacher, LaRiva said she found herself overwhelmed as schools in New York City shut down in the spring. I had so many students, she said. Because they are special ed students, they're mandated to have live lessons. They're also so very young. Then LaRiva said she'd come across Chinati's lessons on Instagram. She loved them. She started incorporating the prompts into her own teaching, sometimes adding her own twists. Her students wrote and submitted poems or drew visual representations of how they pictured sounds like bird songs and falling leaves. LaRiva said she especially loved how the Chinati curricula were open-ended and unpretentious. They were very conceptual, she said, and yet they lend themselves to doing something that's not intimidating. They felt like projects that weren't just the providence of art teachers, but something that she as a special ed teacher could do. LaRiva also liked the soothing energy of Chinati's videos and projects. I like the slowness of them, she said with a laugh. It's kind of like that Mr. Rogers thing, especially as coronavirus continues to disrupt the lives of children. It's better if everything's not so speedy, she added. She found the projects calming and in the moment, like you're sharing a space. Making Together was just the start of Chinati's digital curriculum. Next up was Summer Shakeup, the Chinati standard summer programming for students, which this year also went virtual. The topic this year was process. Parents could also stop by and pick up art supplies. After summer shakeup, Chinati educators spent 4 weeks studying local flora and fauna. Then they launched their latest project, Discover Play Make, a project exploring these materials behind art from natural materials to found media. Now the Chinati Foundation is getting ready for the rest of its school year programming. Typically, that might include everything from poetry workshops with high school freshmen in the fall to screen printing with seniors in the spring. Educators at both Chinati and Marfa ISD say they're committed to have their poetry workshops this year, but with the coronavirus pandemic still disrupting daily life, it's unclear what exactly that will look like. We've been talking to Michael and trying to figure out ways we can still partner together, said Oscar Aguero, the superintendent for Marfa ISD. We've looked at doing Zoom meetings and videos, kind of like we did for Summer Shakeup. He says the poetry lessons will still happen for ninth graders this year, though he acknowledges the school is still brainstorming what that means. It's really hands-on activity Roche does with the poetry, Arguero said. They talk about space and how to line up words on paper. That's a little harder to do on a Zoom meeting. Arguero, who also has two children at Marfa ISD, has been happy with Jannati Foundation's virtual programming. They're well-designed, he said of the Foundation's videos. His own daughter has enjoyed the prompts and activities. Both Bondi and Roche said they didn't tailor their projects this year to focus on coronavirus. At the same time, they acknowledged the virus and all of its disruptions was a theme that showed up in artwork by students. We find ourselves in this weird time, and art is kind of a way to think about and process what's going on, Bondi said. Also, it's a way for us to continue to share Jannati. Bondi foresees Jannati's all-virtual education continuing through at least the start of 2021. Even if there's a vaccine, it's not going to be back to normal, she said. I think we'll continue our Instagram presence. We're remaining flexible. She stressed that any decision we make is based on the science and what public health officials are saying. Bondi misses seeing students in person and looks forward to doing that again. Being in person with the art is an experience that you can't really replicate, she said. Still, being online has its perks. We are able to provide greater accessibility to the collection, to the projects that we do, and that's very exciting to me, she said. Even after the pandemic's over, she hopes to continue making lesson plans available online for students across the country. Maybe that's something we've learned along the way.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading a few additional articles from the Big Bend Sentinel. In order to read as many articles as possible, I'll be reading portions of these stories. COVID-19 testing in Marfa, Presidio, and Alpine next week. Published September 30th. Military testing teams are coming back to the Big Bend region with sites currently scheduled for Tuesday, October 6th at the City of Presidio EMS and Fire Station at 100 East FM 170 in Presidio. Wednesday, October 7th at the Marfa Visitor Center at 302 South Highland Avenue in Marfa. And Thursday, October 8th at the North Brewster County Emergency Response Center at 102 South 2nd Street in Alpine. These sites will run from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. or until capacity is reached. There will be oral swab tests. Appointments aren't required, but a form of personal ID is. J.D. Newsom named new executive director of Big Bend Regional Hospital District by Abby Perot, published September 9th. The hospital district has hired a new executive director looking to J.D. Newsom, the former executive director of the Big Bend Conservation Alliance, to fill the role and bring new ideas to the bi-county district. Newsom will oversee the organization, including the provision of services, helping clients enroll in the indigent health care program set up by legislation to serve the indigent population of Brewster and Presidio counties. Entering the role during a public health crisis, Newsom said the pandemic has shown how limited our medical infrastructure is regionally. The big worry is that our hospital and healthcare resources won't be able to respond to a mass influx of COVID patients. I think that's kind of shown the limited nature of our infrastructure out here, not just for residents, but for tourists as well. Newsom's primary goal is to ensure that anyone eligible for the program is aware of it and able to enroll and make use of its services. But I also think there's an opportunity for the district to be creating innovative programs and initiatives that not only help our clients, but increase our healthcare infrastructure and increase access to healthcare for the whole community, he said. To find out if you are eligible for services from the BBRHD, including assistance with medical costs, contact the district's Alpine office at 432-837-7051 or their Presidio office at 432-229-2151 to speak with a patient advocate. Man gets pretrial intervention in case involving city council threats by Stephen Paulson, published September 30th. Michael Calvert, a local man previously charged with felony terroristic threats after he allegedly threatened to shoot Marfa City Council members, has taken a pretrial intervention deal that will allow him to avoid a full criminal trial. under the terms of Calvert's agreement, which was filed in Presidio County courts last month, Calvert agreed to a number of conditions, including avoiding drugs, alcohol, and people who have been previously convicted of felonies. He also agreed to break no laws himself. Per that agreement, Calvert will also pay a monthly fee of $60. His intervention period, which technically started in mid-July, is slated to last for 6 months. Pre-trial intervention, also known as pre-trial diversion, is similar to probation in that it allows defendants in criminal trials to avoid prison time. But unlike probation, which comes after a person is found guilty or has even served part of their sentence, pre-trial intervention happens before defendants are formally convicted of crimes and takes the place of a full criminal trial. Calvert's charges stemmed from a heated animal ordinance workshop at the Marfa City Council in 2019, at which Calvert told the council that he would kill every one of you. At the time, reactions from council members ranged from shock to laughter. After the meeting, Calvert expressed regrets for his remarks. He had made them, he said, because it seemed like the city council didn't even want to listen to public comments. Right after I said it, I thought, "You idiot, you're not going to shoot nobody," he told the Big Ben Sentinel after the incident. "If they need an apology, I'll give it in writing, or whatever they need." Calvert was indicted in January after authorities accused him of allegedly placing the public or a substantial group of the public in fear of a serious bodily injury, according to court filings. Authorities charged him with a felony terroristic threat. He turned himself in on a $2,500 personal recognizance bond, meaning he didn't have to pay the sum to secure his release. Calvert, through his attorney, Liz Rogers, declined to comment for this story, but in an interview on Monday, Rogers said both she and Calvert were glad the case was over. City and TxDOT nix roundabout plans for intersection in front of courthouse, by Abby Perot, published September 23rd. The intersection of Highland Avenue and Lincoln Street in front of the courthouse will receive an update this spring, with Marfa City Council rejecting a roundabout plan and giving vote of support to the Alternative 2 plan that would install stoplights at the three-way stop, among other additions. Changes to the intersection were proposed in response to safety concerns at the three-way intersection, which saw a higher incidence of crashes over a three-year period, including a few incapacitating injuries, though no deaths. The dangers prompted the Texas Department of Transportation to study ways to improve that traffic situation. Marfa Meats brings meat processing back to town, by Abby Perot, published September 16th. It has been half a century since meat processing has had a home in Marfa, but a new project dubbed Marfa Meats hopes to bring back the industry, connecting local cattle with consumers. Hailing from Indiana, Christy Miller comes from a background not in ranching, but finance. She arrived in Marfa 5 years ago, has slowly planted her feet in town full-time, and now is undertaking a meat processing plant on Highway 90 west of town. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, almost 84,000 cattle called the Tri-County home in 2017, and driving around the area, they are not hard to see. So last year, Miller started wondering, why can't I get a local steak? On a hot afternoon in late August, Miller stood on her land west of town, recalling how exactly she came to the decision to learn the meat processing trade and make the big investment in launching a plant. The property, which boasts a house, some open land, and a defunct tennis court, is the future home of Marfa Meats. At Marfa Meats, Miller plans to have the federal and custom certification so that she can process meat for local ranchers' personal use, businesses can resell their meat, and so she can launch her own meat subscription service. That meat subscription service will cater in part to tourists, who Miller wants to participate in the local ranching community in a more meaningful way, hoping that they'll leave town with more than a hat. Her operation will not be huge, with her facility able to hang at most 90 carcasses at a time. She plans to start with at least 4 employees, bringing jobs to the area, and she hopes helping create work for Sol Ross students interested in pursuing meat processing after they graduate. She hopes to eventually open the doors for a butcher shop and have community-supported agriculture through a garden on site. For now, Miller is working on the layout of pens and awaiting the delivery of the prefabricated modules for harvesting, a carcass cooler, a cut and pack, and a finished goods cooler, all destined for the site of the old tennis court. Union Pacific sues City of Alpine over train ordinance, by Stephen Paulson, published September 30th. Earlier this year, Alpine City Council passed an ordinance to fine train companies for blocked crossings. Union Pacific was regularly parking its trains in the middle of town, city officials said, creating traffic headaches and hindering emergency response times. Now the company wants to kill that ordinance in federal court. In a complaint, the company argues that train traffic is regulated at the federal level and that, therefore, Alpine has no business telling it what to do. The lawsuit, which was filed in a Pecos court last Thursday, names the City of Alpine and its attorney, Rod Ponton, as defendants. It asks the court to keep Alpine city officials from imposing fines on the company and to declare Alpine's ordinance void and unenforceable under the Federal Railroad Safety Act and other federal laws. Union Pacific, whose train tracks cut across virtually every major north-south thoroughfare in Alpine, has for decades squabbled over these right-of-way issues with Alpine residents. But until recently, the city and train company had reached a truce. In the late 1990s, the company promised the city it would do periodic checks on wait times and review concerns about lengthy blocked crossings in the downtown area, according to public records from that era. As a sign of cooling hostilities, the then community relations director for the company even told the city it had a very impressive railroad park and that he would be happy to provide decorative decals. Then last year, residents once again started complaining about blocked crossings. City officials noticed it too, and they started considering an ordinance.
Hello, this is Cindy reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, September 24th. Budgets Remain the Same Despite Pandemic, by Nathan Hewer. The Fort Stockton Community Theater, Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, and the Fort Stockton Historical Society had their budgets decided for the 2020-2021 fiscal year on Tuesday, September 22nd, at the Fort Stockton City Council regular meeting. The amounts approved were the same from the previous year, according to Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander. I believe they all stayed the same. Everybody would love an increase, but very few got one this year due to the pandemic. The City of Fort Stockton agreed to pay the Fort Stockton Community Theater a total of $300 for each performance, with a budgeted amount for the entire year being at $10,000. Payment is due upon the completion of each series of productions upon submission of the invoice to the CVB. The funds for payment are provided by hotel-motel taxes. The City of Fort Stockton shall pay the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce a total of $76,800 in the form of 12 payments of $6,400. Payments will be made no later than the 15th of each month, with the final payment made no later than September 15th, 2021. The date is the last month of the city's fiscal year. The city also agreed to pay the Fort Stockton Historical Society a total of $160,000, which is to be paid in 12 monthly payments of $13,333.33. The amount is due by the 15th of each month. The dollar amount will also be covered by hotel-motel taxes. The society owns and maintains the Annie Riggs Memorial Museum and Fort Stockton's oldest house, in an effort to promote tourism in the city of Fort Stockton. The FSHS is also responsible for the upkeep of the historic fort grounds. COVID-19 Active Cases Plummet, by Nathan Hewer. In just a matter of 22 days, the number of active COVID-19 cases in Pecos County has dropped from 32 cases to 6 as of Tuesday, September 22nd. Pecos County dropped below 20 active cases on September 15th, starting a streak that'll need to reach 30 days before County Judge Joe Schuster can apply for out-of-station. the ability to remove mandates by the governor of Texas. On Thursday, September 17th, during Schuster's weekly COVID-19 update with Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander, Schuster reiterated what he had said the week before, that being he views masks as a good means to stop the spread of the virus and sees no reason to apply to remove the mandate of wearing them, even if the county surpasses the 30 consecutive day mark for being under 20 active cases. Here's my deal. I'm going to go along with the governor right now as far as masks. I think it's the most important tool that we have in helping to control the disease by air. I think it's pertinent that we continue to wear masks for the time being till we can get to a time and place where the governor thinks we can take the mask down, Schuster said. Schuster went on to say that he thinks the time period when masks will not have to be worn anymore is when there is a vaccine that can reach the masses. I believe that's going to come someday when the vaccine is here, and that could possibly be part of the new normal daily business. Until then, I'm in favor of keeping the mask on right now, he said. Schuster concluded the meeting by addressing Pecos County hosting youth baseball tournaments. The county judge said the organizations that hold the tournament, specifically USSSA, can have tournaments in the county as long as guidelines by the governor of Texas are followed. They're going to need to line this up with a commissioner in Precinct 2. They're going to need to meet the same restrictions that they've been meeting in all the tournaments they've been going to across the state. They know those restrictions, but they need to set up a time schedule with the commissioner so they can have the fields readily available sometime in the next few weeks, he said. I want them to be able to play their baseball and enjoy it. As of September 22nd, there has been 1,985 COVID-19 tests in Pecos County since the start of the pandemic. A total of 1,643 of those tests were negative. There are 24 tests that are pending and 248 positive tests over the course of the entire pandemic. Pecos County Republicans host Meet and Greet in Fort Stockton by Nathan Hewer. On Tuesday, September 15th, the Pecos County Republican Party hosted a meet and greet at the Sagebrush Cafe and Gifts. Speakers at the event included Chief Justice Jeff Alley, who was appointed as the Chief Justice of the 8th Court of Appeals in 2019. Before his appointment, he served for 5 years as staff attorney to former Chief Justice Ann McClure, and before that he worked as a successful trial and appellate lawyer for 29 years with two El Paso law firms. State congressional candidate Reuben Falcon, who is a member of the Fort Stockton City Council and the winner of the Republican primary for Texas House of Representatives District 74, also spoke at the event on Tuesday. The event, which had approximately 20 people seated to listen to the speeches, was hosted by William Garrison. Falcon focused on his three-plan system regarding property taxes and what he plans to change if elected as the Texas House of Representatives for District 74, the first being to make a constitutional amendment to make the chief county appraiser an elected position instead of an appointed position due to the power they hold. It's appointed by a board that the taxing entities appoint. For example, the city, the county, the school, we appoint members too, and so it's an easy thing. I've been in service all these years and have never raised property taxes, but your values have gone up and you pay more. So my first thought would be to make the chief appraiser and everything in the state of Texas and accountant an elected position, Falcon said. The second part of the plan is to make unfunded mandates unconstitutional. Falcon said that the state of Texas pushes legislation down to the local governments, and in turn the local government have to use property taxes to pay for unfunded mandates. We use our property taxes to pay for all these unfunded mandates at the jail, at the city level, at the county level, at the school level. And all these new laws, you got to do this now, but you got to pay for it. Instead, property taxes are supposed to pay for our services and talent are being used by laws the state legislature passed. so I want to make those unconstitutional, he said. The third part of the plan is the most aggressive one, according to Falcon. The Fort Stockton business owner wants to do away with property taxes altogether and replace it with a consumption tax. The governor has said this is the future of Texas, which is replacing property taxes with a consumption tax. The people, business owners, property owners, homeowners, are paying for way too much for the umbrella of what it means to live in Texas. Falcon is running against Democratic candidate Eddie Morales Jr. for the Texas House of Representatives District 74. Chief Justice Jeff Alley is running against fellow Justice Yvonne Rodriguez. Pecos County People. Pastor provides contemporary worship for Hispanic community. Rodriguez to attend National Prayer March on Friday in D.C. by Nathan Hewer. This past weekend marked 4 years of being the pastor at Torre Fuerte Church for Fort Stockton native Isai Rodriguez. But long before he took over the Fort Stockton-based church, Rodriguez was raised in a family with pastoring tradition. The 35-year-old's grandfather, Pedro Rodriguez, was a pastor, and his father, Juan Rodriguez, followed in Pedro's footsteps and became a pastor as well. Yet his father and mother, Raquel Rodriguez, never pressured or pushed Isai or his brother Isaac Rodriguez to become pastors. There was no pressure involved. They knew it was up to us if we pursued it or not, Isai said. The lifelong Fort Stockton resident added that he didn't need influence to follow in his dad's or grandfather's footsteps. Isai knew from a young age that he wanted to become a pastor. I grew up, and I guess you can say I had a calling. I was always different from everybody. I seek more spiritual things, so I decided to go with it, he said. Following high school, Isai went to El Paso, Texas for 2.5 years to become ordained by the Apostolic Ministerial Alliance before becoming a pastor a short time after. Isai became a pastor knowing he wanted to modernize worship services to become more contemporary, as many churches have done in various denominations. Growing up, Isai experienced the way Hispanic churches maintained old traditions and never changed. So when he got his opportunity to move his Spanish-speaking church, Torre Fuerte Church, along with the times, he took advantage of it. I didn't do anything for a while. I just kind of checked the waters. I wanted to do something different with the Hispanic side, Isai said. I know we got Grace Point, we got North Side that are doing great things. They're doing new things in English. But everything here on the Hispanic side of things is a lot more old-fashioned. I mean, there's some churches here that I visited in the early 90s, and nothing has changed. Isai made a point of noting that the changes to more contemporary services doesn't change the word he's preaching or their belief system. I preach the same word. We turn off lights during worship and stuff like that. Music is more contemporary, he said. As Hispanics, we hold Christianity so dear, we believe it's not capable of changing. They think changing the traditions is going to get you on God's bad side for some reason. I do that too. I'm fighting that old mentality. As for the future, Isai is heading to Washington, D.C. this weekend for the National Prayer March led by Evangelist Franklin Graham. Thousands of pastors, church members, and believers from across the nation will be attending. Isai said he felt in his heart that him and his wife, Rita Rodriguez, should attend and help pray for our country during this turbulent time. I just felt in my heart to be there. There is going to be a lot of great pastors, a lot of well-known evangelists, he said. There are some things that no political party can fix. As much as they say only God can change certain things, and that's why we're going to be there. Isai and his wife will be going live on Torre Fuerte Church's Facebook page around 1 p.m. Central Time. Isai and his wife have been married 13 years and have 2 kids, Isaac and Ivan, who are 10 and 5 years old. Outside of his church duties as a pastor, Isai is a senior lease operator with Concho Resources and has held that position for 2 years. Do something. Your guide to local places to go and things to do. Saturday, October 3rd, Fort Stockton Community Theater will hold tryouts for the children's Christmas musical, The Littlest Angel, on Saturday, October 3rd, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Nelson Street Theater, 102 South Nelson. The play will be directed by Ruben Gonzalez and Jody Day and will be performed from December 10th through the 13th. Students from 1st through 8th grades are encouraged to try out. Students should attend tryouts even if they have called to sign up. Friday through Wednesday, October 16th through the 21st, Fort Stockton Community Theater will hold its next play, a reprise of The Odd Couple, the female version. Written by Neil Simon and directed by Alice Dwerkson. Performed by special arrangement with Samuel French, Inc., Neil Simon's The Odd Couple entertained Broadway audiences as well as movie and television audiences. FSCT has delighted audiences with both the male and female versions of the play and is planning to again. Seating will be limited. Reservations will be required. Friday through Saturday, October 30th through the 31st, Horsehead Crossing Celebration. The Pecos County Historical Commission, PCHC, will commemorate the various historical figures who passed over this well-known crossing throughout the 16th through the 19th centuries, including the Comanche War Trail, the Emigrant Trail, the Butterfield Overland Stage, and the Goodnight Loving Trail, made famous by Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, September 24th. Monahans Volunteer Fire Department welcomes new rescue truck. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Around 200 people met at the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department on Monday night to celebrate the arrival of the new rescue and service fire truck. The premier medium rescue truck is a year 2020 model 4x4 Freightliner. It is 33 feet long and will be a service truck with some of the best rescue equipment on board, such as airbags, struts, tools, jaws, and air refill stations for the self-contained breathing apparatus bottles, powerful winch with pull points on all sides of the truck. Quote, "The purchase of these trucks was made possible by a lot of people and is a major upgrade for the department and the community," Monahans Volunteer Fire Chief Eddie Nelm said. In November of 2018, Ward County Commissioners approved the purchase of two new vehicles for the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department at a cost of $1.1 million. In November 2019, the department welcomed the arrival of a light rescue truck, which was built by Metro Fire Apparatus Specialists Incorporated out of the Houston area, and cost a little over $550,000. The new rescue truck, also built by Metro Fire Apparatus, cost $480,000, with an additional $113,000 for the equipment, bringing the total cost for the new truck to $593,000. Quote, "We saved almost $400,000 by getting two trucks, and the department will be more effective by having two separate rescue vehicles," Nelms added. Ward County is 836 square miles, and Nelms said, quote, "We can effectively be able to travel 930 to 940 miles, which will cover calls into Winkler, Ector, and Crane counties in these two new trucks," end quote. Quote, "There have been several instances where we've been called to wrecks that have simply been too much for our older equipment," Nelm said. "With the new trucks, we can lift over 180,000 pounds, secure it, and suspend it for trapped victims. There isn't anything we cannot open, cut up, or basically lift for any rescue. The lights on the rescue truck can light up an area the size of a football field. We can do more than ever for any type of call. The new trucks makes Monahans a potent rescue team," he said. Monahans City Manager Rex Thee asked citizens to keep their trees, which have limbs hanging over the roadway, trimmed back. Quote, "These trucks are 11 to 11.5 feet tall and have very expensive lighting and equipment. We need residents to trim the trees to at least 14 feet high in order to allow firemen to get the trucks up to structures and not get them damaged, Thee said. Guests were invited to stay, ask questions, and have a look inside the trucks. Quote, "The new trucks are really for the firemen. They put their lives on the line every day and put others first. I want them to feel comfortable and safe and for them to know they are protected with good equipment. We as a community owe that to them," Nelm said. Ward County EMS professionals were also on hand at the event with the new ambulance on display. No active COVID-19 cases in the county. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. There were no active cases of the COVID-19 virus, according to a report obtained by Ward County Judge Greg Holly from the Texas Department of State Health Services as of Wednesday morning. Quote, "While we know of no active case in Ward County, you might have noticed that our pending tests went from 1 to 14. That means we've had a good bit of testing in the last day or so, and thus could very well be reporting additional cases in the next couple of days," end quote. Across the county, there have been 122 cases, 2 deaths, no active cases, 901 tests administered, and 14 pending. After several weeks of declining active cases across the state, the numbers have increased over the past week to an estimated 87,000 as of Wednesday morning, up from 68,000 last week. There has been a total of 716,000 confirmed cases, with 14,994 deaths and 613,000 recoveries, according to the DSHS. Across the nation, 6.9 million cases have been reported, with about 201,000 deaths. Resident voices concerns about trash, dilapidated buildings. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Although not on the Tuesday agenda, Linda Gemple spoke briefly with the council at the beginning of Tuesday's regular meeting about trash piled up in the front of homes throughout Monahans. Quote, "To me, it is an eyesore and very unwelcoming. When people are looking for homes, they don't want to live in an environment that looks like a trash can," Gemple said. Gemple also mentioned old businesses around town which are dilapidated and with roofs caving in. Quote, "This is certainly an issue, but not a new issue. The city has a full-time code enforcement officer to handle these issues, but it is a difficult thing to do and an ongoing battle," Mayor David Cutbirth said. Cutbirth thanked Mrs. Gemple for speaking to the council and informed her no action could be taken since she wasn't on today's agenda. Along with Cutbirth, City Manager Rex Thee and council members Jeppy Wilson, Ivy Valenzuela, Calvin Carroll were all present. Councilmen Richard Hawkins and Rudy Hernandez were absent. In regular business, a request to close 13th Street between Stewart and East Monahans Parkway Streets from 5 to 7 p.m. on October 31st was approved. The request was submitted by Crossroads Church, which will host the annual Fall Festival on that day in the parking lot of the Ward County Event Center. A trunk or treat will be held and food truck will be on hand for the event. In other business, the council opened sealed bids for the coming fiscal year fuel purchases. Bond construction on schedule. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Construction projects are proceeding on schedule, Scott Reed, senior associate architect with Parkhill Smith & Cooper, told the trustees of the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD during Monday's meeting. Quote, "The site for new elementary has been cleared off. Renovation of Walker Junior High is progressing well. High school construction should be started soon, and the demolition of the high school auditorium will begin around December 1st, after Walker Junior High is completed." Quote, "We are almost done with the high school bids. We are getting lots of bids, and they are a little high, but manageable. We will have a special meeting soon to review bids, Reed said. Since all of the bids for the high school had not been received, the action to consider the proposed guaranteed maximum price was tabled. Trustees present for the meeting were Quint Melius, Donna Garcia, Raymond Reyes, Joel Greiner, and Nancy Upchurch. Trustees Bobby Almanza and Steve Fine were not present. District Superintendent Chad Smith presented the enrollment report, which reflects face-to-face instruction has increased since the start of school. As of September 18th, 84% are now receiving face-to-face instruction. Quote, "That is the highest of any district in ESC Region 18, Smith said. Total district enrollment has increased slightly from 2,162 students on September 8th to 2,168 on September 18th. Enrollment at Monahans High School was 604, Monahans Education Center, 8, Walker Junior High, 348, Sudreth Elementary, 518, Tatum Elementary, 507, and Cullender Kindergarten, 183. The financial and disbursement reports, as presented by business manager Sarah Harris, was approved by the trustees. Special Programs Director Doug Doge updated the trustees on Grow Your Own Lobo grant program. Two participants have completed the program and have been given full teacher contracts. The program provides grants of $3,000 to instructional aides to help them complete the college requirements for obtaining a teaching certificate. If the program is successfully completed, the participants must agree to teach for 3 years, and $500 per contracted semester will be credited back to the grant program until fully amortized. If the course is not completed, then the funds must be repaid to the district. MEDC accepts $1.1 million bid to complete Parkway. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans Economic Development Corporation met for their regularly scheduled meeting on Monday and considered approving and awarding bids for Phase 2 of East Monahans Parkway. The board approved a low bid of $1.1 million from C.D. King Construction, LLC, to finish Phase 2 of the East Monahans Parkway 8th Street to Business 20. Last month, the board began the process of seeking bids for the project after deciding earlier in the year to only complete the road up until 8th Street in an effort to conserve money due to the downturn in the economy. The interlocal agreement between the city and the county pledged $1 million from the county to help with construction costs. Cost to complete Parkway from 12th Street to 8th Street was $907,000. Quote, "We had several project packets picked up, but only received two back," MEDC Director Ashley Adalso said. The second bid came in at $1.5 million from Onyx General Contractors, who is currently working completing the school access roads. CD construction will begin work after September 28th, and the road will take approximately 70 days to complete. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable for the month of July, totaling $1.2 million, which included $903,000 to LOA Land Development for the Monahans Parkway, $286,000 to Onyx General Contractors for the school access roads and Parkway Detention Pond, $28,000 to Maverick Engineering Detention Pond Platting, Monahans Parkway Improvements, Perimeter Roadways and Utilities for Desert Ridge and Project Representative, and $9,800 for payroll and salaries. The financial report reflecting a balance of $2.7 million in available funds and minutes of the August 27th special meeting were approved. Directors present were Larry Bryant, Camilla Blum, Brian Franks, Richard Irwin, and Oscar Fuentes.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.